Welcome to another episode of Right Now, a podcast on the business and craft of writing brought to you by the Broadleaf Writers Association based in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Zachary Steele, and on tonight we are diving once again back into the round table as we talk to some of our board members. And in this case, we are in part two of our new board members introduction. So I'm very excited today to welcome to the podcast Krista Wilkins, Kim Poovey, and Lorraine Lai. Hello, all.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I'm as happy to have you here as I am on the board. Very excited to have you there and to see what kind of energy and ideas you bring. So, you know, we're going to dive into it here, and I'm gonna do that thing that either you're tired of at this point or you're going to become tired of. And that is, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself because I'd like for everybody to get to know you a little bit better. And we're going to start with you, Crystal.
Awesome. So I am Crystal Wilkins. I have published 10 novels under the name Kerrigan Richards. And I have a master's in professional writing. And I've been writing since I was a kid. So that's a little bit about me.
All right. What about you, Kim?
I'm Kim Peavy. I live in Beaufort, South Carolina, the most beautiful place in the world. No offense to anyone. I was a late bloomer. I didn't really start writing until my 40s. I have 11 books out at this point. I'm working on number 12. I've been both traditionally and independently published. And I live in a haunted house with my husband and dogs.
I am making a note right now about the haunted house because I want to come back to that. Lorraine, follow up a haunted house.
Oh, that's a difficult one. I'm Lorraine Lai. I started my writing career as a kid. I've always written poetry, creative writing, things like that. I was published in South Africa as a child with my poetry. And then I moved here and I did journalism. I worked for a newspaper for a couple of years and then I took a break, like a 20-year break. And here I am again, and I just finished my debut novel, which I'm busy revising. So first
Yay.
Draft. That's it.
Congrats.
Can I possibly pull out of you what this novel is about?
It is a cozy fantasy mystery.
Oh.
Yeah, it's about acceptance, really, the bottom line. But there's maybe a shift shaper.
Okay.
Maybe some fairies.
Ooh.
I'm digging all the genre mashups that are happening now. And I know romanticism gets all the attention, but there's a lot of we just did a Right Now podcast with Van Jensen, who is the author of Godfall, and his is a procedural crime novel with science fiction. And it was a great mashup. I'm digging it. So I'm glad to hear that. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your writing journeys and not just the when did you start, but also the more current, what led you to Broadleaf and what is it that you hope that you can get out of being part of the organization? And also, what would you hope to be able to give to it? And this is not a test. I'm not going to make notes about it and check you on it later. There will be no review later. I'm just curious. I like to hear what people have to say about that. Kim, let's hear what you have.
I have a bizarre one. I hated writing until about 5 years ago, but I've been writing for about 16 or 17 years. Like I said, an odd person. I was a professional storyteller, and so it kind of morphed into that. I have been through a lot in my writing career. My first two novels were traditionally published. Loved my publisher until I didn't. A week before my third novel was to be released for them, they shut down and convicted of 44 felonies.
That is a way to go out.
Yeah, it was bad. So I was kind of shoved into the indie world. And kicking and screaming, crying, quitting, kicking and screaming, crying, quitting, drinking in between all of that. Eventually I figured it out. So I've been indie now 9 years and I wouldn't go back traditional. I mean, that's just me personally. Anyone who does traditional go right ahead. It's a personal preference. And so Broadleaf was my first stepping out into my first writer's conference, because I'm an introvert, and it was such a safe space, and everybody was phenomenal, and I felt comfortable. I felt like I found my tribe. And so I went again this next year, and I joined, and I just everybody continues to be nice. It's not like, oh, they're nice in the beginning and then all of a sudden they're not.
Once we get you, we don't care anymore.
But my goal is to help other writers achieve their dreams without having to go through all of the nightmare stuff I went through, and help them realize that everybody's journey is different and individualized, and that that's okay. They don't have to do it the way somebody tells them to do it. They have to find their own way. And if I can help them do that, then that's my goal.
Nice. Lori?
Yes, so Broadleaf, Patty Callahan Henry posted something last year that she
PCH.
was going to be there, and I had to come. And it was just the most amazing thing. I mean, from the first minute that I walked into the Broadleaf conference and was greeted, I mean, as soon as you walk in, everybody's just so friendly. They're greeting you, they're asking you, how are you? And asking about you. You know, it was like, it was real interest. It wasn't just, oh, who are you? It was a truly interest. And I remember seeing Kimberly Brock too, because she was one of the panelists. And I'm like, of course, here I am fangirling over all these people whose books I read. And I'm like, they're normal people.
Isn't that great?
And they talk to you and they ask you and they're genuinely interested, like, what are you working on? And I'm like, me? Really? Okay. Yeah. So I really did feel that the community, the sense of community, and the just welcomingness of everybody was very, just, I don't know, it felt good. It felt like, you know, like Kim said, I found my tribe. And each day I learned more, and decided, you know, this is something I'd love to get involved with. Same thing. I want to help others. I want to learn from everybody. And I think, like, we can all learn from each other, regardless of where you are in your journey. We all have something to give and something to take. You know, it's like we learn from each other, and I think it's just wonderful.
It's interesting you talk about the real people, the speakers, and there's one of the things that I always loved about the conferences is that one, you get the pitch sessions or the mentoring sessions where you're sitting across the table from an agent, you're like, oh my gosh, they're not just words in a rejection letter, they're actually human beings with feelings. But the speakers are the same way, and as you are all learning right now, we work very hard to make sure that the speakers we get are there because they want to be, and they want to give for these reasons that both you and Kim have already mentioned. But it reminded me, what you're talking about reminded me of a story with Lynn Cullen several years ago, and she was stuck on a novel which she now has on the shelves. She couldn't quite get past this hurdle, and she was having a conversation with a group of attendees and another speaker, and I don't remember who it was, and collectively they all had this conversation that helped her break through. And then she went and finished her book. So, it's interesting. And I always encourage people when you go to conferences, talk to the speakers because they want you to. They want to be, they're there to give back. And now I will step down off the pulpit, and Crystal, is your turn.
So my writing journey, like I said, I've always written, but I published my first novel in 2013 as a self-published author. And you know, in 2013, it was brand new. There was so much that you had to learn. And it was kind of like you just kind of learn by yourself because, you know, it was such a new thing for everybody. And so over the years, I didn't really go to any conferences. I didn't pursue any, like my master's degree in professional writing because I didn't think that it would help. And I don't know where I got that from, but as soon as I went to grad school for professional writing, I was introduced to a lot of different conferences, and one of them being Broadleaf. Somebody suggested that I go there, and so I did. And I loved it. I mean, I actually gained a lot of knowledge from a lot of the speakers that were there, and they also had like a YA conference, and not many places have that. And I write young adult, so it was, it was obviously it was nice to have that. And then for me, I definitely want to help other writers, and I want to improve their writing and, make sure that there are no rules. And if you, I guess if you know how to, if you know the rules, you can break them. But I mean, but even in publishing or writing or any of that stuff, like it's always meant to be broken, And I think as a self-published author, you have more freedom to do that. And so I think that's what I would, that's what I want to get out of it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. The industry is very well known for creating boxes that they want people to be in. So, which I think is also another reason why I enjoy the genre mashing, because that's not really in the box. So, yeah, I imagine having
Right.
that freedom is a nice luxury.
It is.
So, we can't talk writing journeys without talking about the first worst manuscript that we wrote. I will go first because I want to make sure that I do this just as much as you do. When I was in high school, I was determined that I was going to be like this breakthrough Wunderkind young writer that was going to get published. And I remember like I had built up credits pretty well in high school. Like my last year of high school, I had more counselor aides and chemistry lab aides than I had actual classes. And so I was always back there like scribble writing. I never did anything. I was so useless. I wrote this book and it's still in an envelope and I keep tempting myself to open it up. It was called Strings of the Heart. And it was about I know. It was about this I guess friends that were part of a band and they broke through and had this like overnight success story that also involved meeting like his heartthrob idol. It was mushy and weird and everything 17 that I could put into it, and it was terrible. So who wants to go next now that I've said that?
So I was unpacking some stuff. We were redoing our basement, and I found two old manuscripts that I haven't touched. I don't even remember the one, and I know it was a TV show, a really bad TV show, in that, well, I guess it would have been the 80s, maybe 90s, called Paper Dolls. And so this script that I found, not script, actually, this was a novel, is called Paper Dolls. Because I was obsessing over that at that time. And then the other one is very Agatha Christie. It's a play and it's called The Final Curtain, but I haven't read them. I'm too scared to.
I feel like if I pick it up, I'm going to be equal parts embarrassed and also, well, mortified is probably a better word, and also kind of pleased because I'm like I will definitely be able to see the difference between where I was and where I am.
I feel like it's kind of like, when you watch a movie when you're a kid and you think it's the greatest thing in the world, and then you watch it as an adult and you're like, what was I thinking?
Yes.
That's very true.
I had so when I was younger, I wrote a lot of short stories. But I was also like Lorraine, I was obsessed with a movie. It was called Hocus Pocus. And
Good
then
movie.
I decided to write a fan fiction story of it, which was basically the same story. It wasn't really any fan fiction. It was just me rewriting the story. And then I wrote a Halloween story about a pumpkin whose seeds wouldn't grow. And she was trying to find another pumpkin. And then there were spiders that were her friends. Yeah, I was like 11 when I wrote that, so
All right, you
Checks
make
out.
me feel old. Yeah, I don't have the same experience because, as I said, I was a late bloomer. So my, but I will say this: my first novel that was published in 2012. I love the story. I love the characters. I performed it around the Southeast before I ever actually wrote it into a novel. And I'm a little shy about people reading it now because it was, I had no training. I had no idea what the heck I was doing. Thank God the editor at my publishing house was awesome, and she helped me, make it into something presentable. But I get a little shy about not wanting people not talking about it because I'm afraid that they'll look back and be like, "Oh my God, she wrote that." And I think that's just normal because I can see the progression, and I have readers who have followed me from that first novel to present day. And every time a new book comes out, they're like, it gets better every time, Kim. I can see such a difference in your writing. So I know it's improving, but I get a little, I can't say it was a failure because it wasn't, but I'm a little shy about it.
First of all, I want to talk to you about pseudonyms. When like the very first writing, and I referenced this at the last conference, but the very first conference we did, I took up a lot of time when that thing started telling the story, so I'm not going to do that now. But my first writers conference was at St. Simon's Island Southeastern Writers Association, and that was, it's like a week long thing. And I ended up meeting a good friend and mentor there, and still lifelong friends. And I owe him a lot for who I am as a writer. But I registered under what I thought was going to be my pseudonym at that time, and why I don't know. And I just went there that whole week under that name. I was like, I got to be somebody else for the whole week. It ended up creating a bit of an issue with this person that I met that was trying to help me out, because he went to try to find me, and there was no mention of my name with the hotel, but because I was under my real name. Anyway, that is neither here nor there. That's just me being stupid and young. But that's not what you're doing. What was your reasoning for picking a pseudonym, and is that something that you want to continue with, or do you hope to write under your name, your official name?
So originally I chose the name. I was in high school and I just thought it was a thing that writers did. They just created their own name for an author. Because I wasn't a big fan of my real name, but it became more of I did it for privacy purposes. And now it's kind of where I keep that separate from my like my professional, because I do write under my real name in work or when I write articles and things like that. So it kind of keeps them separated. And I have thought about writing under my real name, but I think it would be mostly like nonfiction or like memoir kind of thing. So.
Okay. Lorraine, you had mentioned that you had a 20-year gap where you weren't writing. And I don't need an explanation for that, 'cause just life, that's enough. But talk a little bit about that break, like what it was, that a decision that you made or that was made for you, and when did you know you needed to get back and start writing again?
Right. So that's a good question because, I've always had words inside me. Like it's just something that always has been a very deep fascination for words. And then that break, I was writing, but more journaling, very personal things that I would probably never share. There were a lot of, like life things, a lot of different things going on, and it was a way to really just put things on paper, but not to share, so to speak. That's when I actually started painting instead. So that I was doing more externally than, and my writing was more of an internal thing. And I wouldn't even say that I wrote daily or weekly or monthly. It was just when the mood hit. But then probably about, I want to say about 3 years ago, I was working on a film set because that's what I was doing for a minute. And all the writers, I got to talking to writers and I was like, oh my gosh, you know what? I really miss this. Like they were coming from the writer's room and they were bouncing ideas off of each other. And I'm like, that's what I mean. I don't necessarily want to do that, but I want the ideas. I want the energy. I want the creativeness. So that's when I started dabbling with it again and started taking some creative writing classes just to get and kind of exercise that muscle, you know, because you kind of forget. And it was really wonderful picking up a pen and paper again, not to do anything like work related. It was just creative. And then the words flowed and it was just wonderful. So yeah, that's how I got back to it.
Cool. I always like hearing that because I mean, not every writer. There are some writers who just they just pile through, or you know, no matter what's going on. I am not that person. I'm always deeply affected by everything that's going on in my life, and I do have breaks that are much longer than I ever want them to be, and I kind of ache when I do that. I'm not whole until I get back to start writing. So I always enjoy having conversations with writers. One. Because it's good to hear that I'm not the only person that ever takes breaks for any amount of time, but also just to hear what you go through in that process. But Kim, I want to talk about traditional in Indian. And I know Crystal, you can feed off this as well. You said that you started off traditionally published and a felonious issue. That's a new one. I haven't heard that one before. But you became an indie published author. So what have of the two, you know, traditionally in indie in your journey, what advantages do you now experience that you didn't before, and what are the negatives that make you wish maybe you were traditionally published?
The beauty of it is that you're in complete control. And the horror of it is that you're in complete control. So when something goes wrong, it's your fault. I see Crystal, she's nodding her head. She knows. It was hard because my publisher did everything for me. And so all of a sudden I am technologically impaired, which you guys are starting to learn from the fact that I couldn't even figure out how to use the spreadsheet for Broadly. Poor Shane, I had to really walk me through that. Anyway, that was, I think, the hardest part. So I had friends that were indie and they made it look so easy. I was like, oh, I can do this. I can do this. I don't know about you, Crystal. It was a nightmare for me learning, you know, how to do this, how to do that. And it took about 3 years for me to finally get a rhythm and figure out. And I'm still, it still alters and it still changes depending on what's going on with books and sales. But I love the fact, now I was very blessed because my publisher never owned the rights to my book. And that's another reason I will never go traditional. I will never give up the rights to my book because when they shut down and went to court, I owned everything. I didn't have to wait for things to be released. I didn't have to fight to get my rights back. But I love the fact that I can produce a book and release it when I want to. If I want to do 3 books a year, I can do three. If I want to do one, I can do one. I decide on my cover. I decide on my title, because in my opinion, this is an artistic endeavor. And Crystal, maybe you can speak to this too. It's coming from our heart. We know what it needs. Crystal.
I mean, I definitely agree. Like I said, I mean, I published in 2013 and it was so different than what it is now. And I've learned so much since then because, you know, when I look back, I'm like, oh Lord, I should have done this and I should have done that, but I didn't know. And so now I feel that, you know, indie publishing has become more, it's become, you know, more legit, I should say. Like people are starting to respect it a lot more. You know, you're still going to have those people who think, oh, you just took the easy way out. And it's like, no, this is not the easy way.
Easy way is traditional when someone's doing all the work for you.
Well, and that was something, you know, I still, you know, I'll still submit to agents just to get feedback. But, and I did submit one of my books to a publisher. And they were like, oh, this is really good. But if you could change this and that and this and rewrite it and then send it back. And I'm like, so you want me to change the entire story? And I'm like, that's no, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not doing this to make money. And I think that's something that writers who do, if they want to self-publish, they think, oh, it's a money grab. It's not. So, I want to
Not
write.
if you're doing it right.
Well, yeah.
Correct.
But I want to write stories that mean something to others. And that can help them through. I mean, I write a lot about mental illnesses and mental health, and so I do write fiction, but I also, I struggle with a lot of that stuff. And so it's nice to hear from fans and they say, thank you for writing this. So when I get those, I feel like I've done good.
I wanted to go to you, Lorraine, first, and this is really for everybody. But so I had this conversation today with a writer that I met that was talking about something that he was struggling with, and it was a really great conversation. We're talking about show versus tell, and he was having difficulty getting his mind around it. And I wanted to know, even after lengthy times of doing this, Crystal and Kim, Lorraine, short period of time, whatever it happens to be, that is there something that you still struggle with that you wish you could be better at?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think the minute you think you've got it all nailed is when you're in trouble. I think that that's something that we all have our own struggles and they change, like sometimes you think, okay, this isn't too bad. Like show versus tell was one of those things, as a matter of fact, that I struggled with because coming from a journalistic background where you're who, what, where, when, why, and how done. I mean, easy, right? It's in the can. You got your 10 inches. I'm going off. But now it's like you have to flesh it out more. And I mean, yeah, you have your opinion and you make it prettier and you do that kind of thing. So I did have a problem with the show versus tell. And I think I've got that. I think, it's like one of those things, like I said, and then maybe I'll struggle with it later. But also character, I tend to get lost in characters. And then sometimes the plot is just, and I'm like, here I am, I'm vibing, right? I'm like, oh, these people are so quirky. They're so fun. I love them. I want to have a cup of coffee with Iris. Oh no, Gina's got a book stolen. Why? I mean, it's just, so I think that that's where I can sometimes get really lost is the whole delving into the characters and their backstories. Because I mean, it's important to know that stuff, but it's not necessary to always give all that information. I mean, all in one block. Here's a whole chapter just on backstory.
Yeah.
You got to kind of weave it in, and that's
Sure.
sometimes difficult.
Info dumping is a common issue that people struggle with. Crystal, what about you?
I have always struggled with descriptions. I don't know why, but I was actually talking to my best friend about this the other day. Because I was just like, I'm so tired when I get home and I don't feel like writing. And so I was like, maybe you should just write it for me. I'll give you the pointers. And she's like, oh, the dialogue is going to be awful. And I was like, that's actually the one thing that I'm really good at, that I've always been told that my dialogue is really good. And it's, to me, it's kind of strange that people struggle with dialogue, because for me, I'm like, well, I just write how people talk. But describing things, no, I am terrible at it. And I was joking with her. I was like, yeah, I say things like, yes, the table is round and flat. But yeah, that's, I don't, it's hard for me. But I mean, and I took a screenwriting class. And I don't know if you guys have ever taken screenwriting or written a screenplay or anything like that. It was so challenging, because with screenwriting, you don't have to describe anything. And that to me was just, it was weird. So when I first started writing it, you know, my professor was like, you got way too many descriptions in here. I'm like, wait, what? It was strange. It was very strange for me.
Yeah. Kim?
The synopsis that goes on the back cover, it was an absolute nightmare for me.
Yeah, the
I
jacket
absolutely,
copy.
and everyone says, write that first and the story will just flow. And it's like, I put it off and I put it off. And then when it's time, it's like,
How do you write it first?
I don't
I
know.
don't,
I don't, I
yeah,
just can't.
I don't.
I'm a pantser to begin with. So there's no outlining.
Well,
Because I'm like,
I'm
I
an
don't even know what this is about. So
I'm an obsessive outliner. Like I do extensive outlining, but I still wouldn't dare try to write jacket copy before I had written the book.
It's a nightmare. Even I've tried it both ways, trying to get five little sentences and pack everything in, especially when you're doing a series.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's
Yeah.
a nightmare. I used to struggle with the show versus tell. And then I started doing these little exercises when I would go walking or running, usually when I was walking down after the run. And what I would do is I would make myself describe something in five different ways. So I'd like, you know, clouds in the sky. Okay, you know, fluffy clouds spinning, you know, and then it's a herd of clouds, you know, parading across a you know, the pasture of azure, you know, a blue pasture, whatever. And you know, by the time you get to the fifth one, you're making up stupid stuff. But it stretched my mind to start looking at things and seeing them in different ways. And that's the little exercise that I just did. I mean, I think most people struggle with show versus tell. It's not easy now, but I find that that helped me work through some of that struggle. Just doing little crazy. I'm a psychologist professionally, so I'm always, you know,
Digging into the
psychoanalyst.
head. That's good for character building then.
Oh, it's great,
Yes.
cathartic when you're, you know, when
Well,
the characters or the people you don't like say
yeah,
some
well,
terrible things.
I think even more so, I think one of the things that I feel like beginning writers struggle with the most is character development, and you get kind of flat characters because they don't channel their, now I'm going to add to this, their 5-year-old, their inner 5-year-old, or perhaps their inner therapist, where they ask why. It's like, okay, so they're angry all the time. Why are they angry all the time? And then, you know, you just have this chain of events that never ends because little 5-year-old you is like, why? So I think having that sort of clinical approach to, you know, psychology, therapy, everything, would be very beneficial.
You would think. And
Ah.
that's one of the things that my writing coaches always, you gotta dig deeper, Cam, into their what into their psyche. I tend to kind of, I guess, gloss over it. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
I have this exercise that I do, and it's good for both show versus tell and character building. When I do workshops, I present a series of pictures. And the one that I always focus on, and I was actually had when I was having this conversation today, I talked about is the picture of a young lady standing at the end of the dock over looking over a lake, and you've got gray clouds in the sky and trees on the other side of the water, and there's a little bit of ripple, so you know that there's some wind. I happen to know the photographer that took the picture, so I know that this woman was about 4 months pregnant, but she was facing the other way and you couldn't tell. So the exercise is to take a picture like that, and instead of just seeing the story captured in a moment, like talk more about what's going on with that person. And in that moment, every time I see it, I'm taken by this overwhelming feeling that she must have been like, I don't know what was in her head, but this is what I'm interpreting. Like looking over this water as something that was about to change. You know, it would never look the same again. Because she was going to have this child and her life was forever changed. So she's got this mix of fear and anxiety and elation and joy and everything happening in one moment. And that's how I character build. And I then work backwards from there to try to figure out how we got to those moments.
So
But anyway, oh, go ahead.
you said that you extensively outlined. So do you do that before you write anything?
I think I am a habitual procrastinator, so I can't really sit here and pretend like, no, I just do this because it's the right way to do it. I also always like to know what I'm walking into, and I don't care if it's the grocery store or writing a novel. I need to know what I'm walking into. With the most recent book, Perfectly Normal, when I finished that, and my publisher was like, okay, what are you working on next? And I told him the idea, and he said, cool, we want that one. Write me up an outline. And I sent him a 12,000 word outline of the entire story as I saw it. But the reason that it was so long is because in every single one of these sections that were chapters, every time I had in my head dialogue that was important, I would put it in there so that. Because for me, dialogue is not just people talking, it's the story moving. And so those were pivotal things that would move the story to the next chapter. And so I put a lot of detail into, I am not a note card person. I put a lot of detail into each of those. And so I remember sending it to him. I said, you asked for this, so enjoy. He appreciated it. But yeah, so no, I have to know what I'm walking into.
So after you have your outline, do you write from like chapter one and then just write it linearly?
Linearly, yeah. I can't. There are always scenes that I cannot wait to get to. Perfectly Normal, The Weight of Ashes both have one particular scene toward the end of the book that, like, just emotionally, I could feel, every time I thought about it. And I was so anxious to get there, but I didn't want to get too impatient and write something that didn't have the emotional weight that I wanted it to have. And for it to have that emotional weight, I needed to be in a place where I was ready to let it go. It's what works for me. And I know a lot of writers who are like, no, I wrote the last chapter first. I'm like, ah, that is insanity.
Yeah, I can't. Well, you would hate the way I write. I mean, it's not, I don't write linearly because I don't know what's going to happen. And if I plot it out though, like 9 times out of 10, as I'm writing, it's going to change because my characters are the ones telling me the story. And sometimes I don't know what they're trying to tell me until I actually like get to know them. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
and even with a 12,000 word outline, I'm going to acknowledge that the story will tell me that if I'm going astray. And even though it feels right when I do the outline, I'm not beholden to it. And I let a story go where it needs to go. So I am not the person to judge anybody on the way they go about writing. Pantsing, plotting, I don't know how well you all know Benji, but he knows that I playfully pick on him all the time because he wants to argue about pantsing and plotting. And I just do it for fun because I don't really care. Even if you're pantsing, you are plotting because in your head you have something going. Even if it's not a complete story, you have little moments that you're working toward. And so the pantsing and plotting thing is, it's just all about how prepared do you need to be before you start writing your book? And for me, I need to have my book for my book.
I've tried plotting. I want to be able to plot. No. No
It's
matter how hard I try, it's this doesn't
I can
work.
plot with my series because I feel like I have to, but if I'm
There's something
writing
like that.
like a standalone, I'm like,
If you're writing a series, you need to know where you're going, because you can't get to book three and go, oh man, I should have put this in book one and then it would connect here better. No, that's you have to be ready for that. But well, I don't want to leave here without hearing Kim's haunted house story. So please, please, and don't let this have been a tease and you're just going to say, yeah, it's haunted. No, I mean, I want
It's haunted.
talk to us about your haunted house.
Okay, so she's an 1890 Victorian cottage. Her name's Faith Cottage. And she is haunted by a Civil War nurse because there's a big mansion catty corner to where we live. That was built in the late 1700s, and our Buford was Union headquarters during the Civil War, so there were no battles here. But that was the hospital for the Black Civil War soldiers. So our house, obviously 1890s, was not built, but this was all hospital grounds.
Oh,
And
wow.
so we have a Civil War nurse that my sister has actually seen. I don't see ghosts, I can just sense them. And we have ghost cats.
Oh,
ooh,
Because two
fun.
owners ago, the woman that lived here had 60 cats. It's a 1,200 square foot house, if that gives you any idea.
That's a lot of cats. That's a lot of cats in a 12,000 square foot house.
It
Yeah. And it had the shag carpeting from the 60. I mean, it from what I understand, it was just really disgusting. So she died, and then the made the newspaper because of the 60 cats in the house, and that's how people know our house. It's kind of sad. But we have, you know how when cats will like rub up against your leg? We'll be standing in a room, and we used to have a cat, he's since passed, but and we would think it was Kramer rubbing up against us, and you'd look down and there was nothing there, and Kramer's asleep in another room. And you know how when cats do spontaneous room changes? You'd see this flying flash of fur, and again, we'd think it was Kramer, and then you'd go in another room, you'd sound asleep. So we have ghost cats.
That is awesome.
So yes, it's truly
Love
haunted.
that. That's a new kid series, Ghost Cats.
Ghost cats. Oh,
now what if I would ever want to be haunted by a cat?
Cat.
I love cats. I love cats so much. We watch the show Ghosts, and I love it.
Oh,
But
perfect.
I love cats, and I'm pretty confident that if anything ever happened to me where I conked my head and could suddenly see ghosts, I would only see ghost cats, which would be a very weird thing. There'd be like ghosts around going, "Hey, I'm right here," and like,
Feed
I'm a
me.
pretty kitty cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but
Yeah. Knocking
anyway,
things off the table.
yes, right. I know, right. Well, look, I obviously we could keep doing this. I enjoy talking to you, and I'm looking forward, honestly, looking forward to what you bring to this organization, and I'm very, very happy to have the three of you as part of Broadleaf and the board of directors. Seeing the organization grow and seeing new energy and new ideas and new perspectives coming in, I mean, it's exactly what I wanted it to be. And so thank you for being on this side of the table, and now you get to be one of those smiling, welcoming, curious voices and faces that people meet when they come in to the conference, which, to throw my plug in there, is September 19th and 20th this year at the Decatur Library. We'll have the 11th annual Broadleaf Writers Conference there. Information going up on the website now at broadleafwriters.com, and registration goes live on April 1st. So, just closing this out really quickly, so you don't have to go on too much. Just tell me one thing, as a board of director now, a member of the board of directors, what is the one thing you're looking forward to at this year's conference?
The fairy tale discussion. I love fairy tales and horror and gothic, and so that's what I'm looking forward to.
Think I'm looking forward to honestly just networking with other authors and writers, because I don't know. I always look forward to that.
Well, now that you have the little board, which always sounds like the board of directors ribbon on your tag, not just board, the board of directors ribbon on your tag, now people will be wanting to talk to you.
Nice.
About you,
Yeah, I'm
Lori.
looking forward to meeting new people, like all the new people that come in. I tend to be very much a person who likes, I'm like a dog. Like, hi, you're my friend. Hi, friend. How are you? Yeah. So I'm looking forward to meeting all the new people and showing them, just making them feel the way I felt when I walked in.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for taking the time to introduce yourself tonight, and for a lovely chat. And thank you, Kim, for sharing your haunted house story. I'm going to be thinking about that one for a while. And I don't have to say, farewell, goodbye, or anything like that, because I know I'm going to see you all soon. But do take care, and the best to you and your writing. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.